Blog Talk Radio.
Well, a dying John McCain killed the Obamacare repeal. Now, he came back from the hospital and claimed that he came back to help save the situation. And I think that I'm just wondering if. Yeah, and I'm not saying that John McCain's not a sincere person, but I do have to ask if his animosity, if his hatred of Donald Trump had anything to do with it. I guess you can never know some things, but it was extraordinary that this thing is over, at least for now. Here's his vote. Pardon me here for 1 second, but here is his vote, and this is on CNN with Don Lemon. Is that guy's name? Real sourpuss. Here we go.
CNN tonight. I'm Don Lemon. Our breaking news right now: the Republicans' Obamacare repeal failed in the Senate tonight. The vote 49-51, and one of those who voted no was Senator John McCain.
Mr. Peters, Mr. Portman.
So that was John McCain that you saw on your screen there, just voting no, putting his finger down. Senator John McCain, of course, just returned to the Senate this week.
All right. So what's behind this? It is. Disappointing. Now, here's John McCain stating something yesterday, last night.
My friends, this is legislation that directly affects the lives of the people in my state. I trust my governor. I trust his people. and he is looking carefully at this. He is looking carefully at the skinny bill repeal, but he's also looking at steps that need to be taken in addition to it. So I am convinced that we can move forward, but we have to have an assurance that it will go to a normal conference. Right now, that is not the case, and we do not have the assurance that is the case. I believe that one of the major problems with Obamacare was that it was rammed through Congress by Democrats without a single Republican vote. I believe we shouldn't make that same mistake again. And if
that noise you heard was little Lindsey Graham standing next to his hero and his buddy John McCain, and his phone goes off. Here is John McCain explaining a little more why he voted down the skinny vote, the skinny Obamacare repeal. It was meant to just repeal and set up for going back and forth between the House and the Senate. It is remarkable, though, that John McCain came back. I mean, did he come back from the hospital to kill this thing? Here we go. Global News. That's what it's called.
Mr. Peters. Mr. Portman.
John McCain entered the chamber, gesturing
Mr.
to get
Reed.
The attention of the clerk. He was recognized with a thumbs down.
Mr.
He
Risch.
Voted no. You heard applause from the Democratic side.
John McCain's statement in full explaining why he killed Donald Trump.
Sorry, I can't do a robotic voice this early in the morning, but, you know, we'll get to the bottom of this, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I've never really trusted John McCain ever since he ran for president, and I just feel like he didn't represent the conservatives. But here is from Bloomberg on Senate GOP block stripped down Obamacare repeal. That's why they called it the skinny version.
It goes back to 1909, and I don't think we've seen history 1, 2, 3 times since 1909 like what we saw last night. What will be the response of the White House?
Well, the president tweeting, Tom, just after this vote failed in the Senate, saying 3 Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down. As I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode, then deal, watch. Of course, he was talking about Senators Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and John McCain, the latter of whom was a big surprise. And there were literally audible gasps on the Senate floor as Senator McCain, having returned to Senate after that brain cancer diagnosis, voted against this health care bill. Senate Majority Leader then saying on the floor, it's time to move on, end quote. This is the beginning of the end of a major policy defeat for this White House.
Kevin, already the pundit stepping in. This is the conservative Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post, probably writing, sitting next to Kevin in their all-nighter up at the Russell Building. Ms. Rubin, they all had the power to stop a bill many openly trashed as a joke and conceded would do great damage. Nevertheless, the Senate hoped someone else would do the dirty work of derailing it. After 7 years of protest and 7 months of legislative paralysis, Republicans have not figured out what to do about Obamacare. What will they do about tax reform?
Well, yesterday, of course, the Secretary of Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, along with Gary Cohn, as well as the congressional leadership and some others, releasing a framework for tax reform, essentially saying the border adjustment tax is dead. That said, it was a very thin on policy specific, but kickstarted
right.
The debate. I can tell you, Tom, I've spoken with several sources here at the Treasury Department.
All right. So that's on the repeal of the skinny bill or the repeal skinny bill going down in flames. And I've got a little explanation here from the Washington Post. The big idea, President Trump's attacks on Republican senators are finally catching up with him, and Lisa Murkowski will not be bullied. So anyway, we'll have to keep looking for answers here, but I want to know to what extent the president's personality has affected this vote, or if this is just self-interest from these people, or conviction, or what. But I think that the president is really not bearing in mind the impact of disrespecting Jeff Sessions. And, you know, it's just kind of got a visceral reaction to, I do anyway, to see somebody who is a friend to him get trashed. But there's always some sort of a plan or a game in Trump's mind. We'll take a break right here, and here's a little bit of James Taylor, Fire and Rain, his most famous song, 523-1450. Be right back. AM Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell. This is live.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans we made put an end to you. I walked out on the morning and I wrote down the song. I just can't remember who to send it to.
All right, so the monument issue has come up, and KRWG has an article, Interior Secretary Visits Las Cruces, Makes No Commitment on Size of Monument. And so Zinke is here today in town, and he's reviewing 27 national monuments. Now, there was this, a kerfuffle, there was a little bit of outrage from the left that supposedly Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke called up Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, and said, this vote on health care may affect you in your state. And so supposedly that's what's happened. Now, Steve Pierce is proposing 60,000 acres of protection for the Oregon Mountains instead of 500,000 acres. Now, there's going to be a town hall meeting about this. From what I understand, you might be surprised to find a few things out about it. Number one, Zinke is supposedly not going to the town hall. Number two, I have been informed off the record that they never contacted Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to invite him to the town hall. So if you could imagine that, but I guess they expected him to come up, or maybe it's a protest town hall. Maybe it is a town hall done in opposition without really wanting the guy there. I don't know, but I found that to be interesting. It seemed to be put out there like he was going to show up, but from what I've been told, nobody contacted him and asked him to show up. 523-1450, if you have any thoughts on that. And let's see if there's anything else in this article. Zinke is limiting, this is from KRWG article, Zinke is limiting his availability to reporters and avoiding a Las Cruces, New Mexico town hall meeting with monumental designation supporters and area elected officials. So I guess Mayor Ken, et cetera, will be there. His itinerary is tightly controlled, and most of his activities will be away from the public eye. The secretary was invited to a meeting. However, he already had a scheduling conflict. So, but anyway, I was told by somebody off the record that, although this article would seem to contradict that I was told that they never actually contacted his staff. Now, Zinke took a helicopter tour on Thursday of the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument in southern New Mexico. After that, he met briefly with supporters and opponents and held a quick press conference. And the Sun News is reporting Zinke said he listened to a variety of elected officials and stakeholders and planned to talk with Governor Susana Martinez. Now, what is Susana Martinez going to say? What's your opinion? Is she for or against this thing? You would think, being a Republican, she'd be against it, but who knows? Now, Lisa Murkowski, Senator Murkowski from Alaska, confirmed that she received a call from Zinke, but said she didn't perceive the call as a threat against her or Alaska. Zinke says he has an August 24th deadline to make a recommendation to President Trump on the monuments. He's scheduled to go on a private hike and meet with supporters of the Rio Grande El Norte National Monument in northern New Mexico on Friday. So I guess that's today. And he's supposed to go on a private horseback ride with Senators Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich, who are both Democrats. And Trump ordered a review of the national monuments based on the belief that a law created by President Theodore Roosevelt, which allows presidents to designate monuments, has been improperly used to protect wide expanses of land instead of places with particular historic or archaeological value. All right, so... And we were kind of talking yesterday, if you tuned in, to this idea that I didn't know about, which was that they are going to take part of Russia, the permafrost, the tundra, and they're going to turn it back into, their plan anyway is to turn it back into plains and to reintroduce a bunch of animals there to fight global warming. And so along the lines of that, you could kind of connect the left's work in trying to take big pieces of land off the map, off the out of use, and turn them into federal lands, federal controlled parks or wilderness areas, that type of thing. As you can identify that as with being part of a larger maneuver, which has been referred to as Agenda 21, a United Nations program, which is meant to move people off land, stop them from using so much water and power and resources, encourage them to get rid of cars and commute by, you know, like we see down here, transportation, public transportation, which nobody seems to be riding. The Agenda 21 movement is also tied in with the Wilderness Alliance's goal to rewild, and that's what we're talking about. Now, in Russia, they believe that they can get these animals to come in and break down the bushes and the trees and return the land to plains as opposed to permafrost, which is, I'd never heard of that before. It's kind of fascinating, but it's part of this bigger picture of saving the earth. So the idea that you're saving the earth anyway. All right. 6:25. And let me read you a few headlines here. The Senate has refused to repeal Obamacare on the vote of John McCain, Obama's opponent. And John McCain said he was standing up for the people of Arizona. There is a very tawdry and obscene fight that started in the White House between Reince Priebus, who's the chief of staff, and this guy named Scaramucci. And between Reince Priebus, Scaramucci, who's now the head communications guy, and he loves the limelight. He loves Donald Trump. He's a New Yorker. I was curious why Trump didn't put somebody like this in charge to begin with, but also with Steve Bannon. So there's a fight going on there. Obama aides unmask hundreds of identities during the election without any justification whatsoever. Surprise? Don't be. Republican lawmakers openly defying president as frustration mounts. Higher taxes may be coming for many. Border wall prototype delayed until winter. Japan slapping 50% tariff on U.S. beef. Brand new greatest car ever, Rolls-Royce, has got a new car there. I think it's called the Phantom 8 or something like that. Now, Americans aren't getting married, and I wanted to bring this up to you just briefly. There has been a claim in other places like Scandinavia that gay marriage led to no marriage. There was some sort of a connection between the two. And so James Dobson, that's the idea anyway, James Dobson was warning, and this is from, I'm looking at an article from Slate Magazine, and this is kind of interesting. I think this is from 2000, and looking for a date on it. I'm amazed at how many things they put on the internet that they don't put a date on. They don't put a date it was published, but I'm looking at the, okay, there we go. Must be going blind. It was right in front of me, May 20th, 2004. So 13 years ago, there was an article that stated the title, Prenuptial Jitters, and in the understatement, the under, title, Did Gay Marriage Destroy Heterosexual Marriage in Scandinavia? Now, Slate is a liberal rag, so we assume that they're going to be against that idea, but Stanley Kurtz claimed to have found proof that the institution will see its demise 13 years ago. Gay marriage helped to kill heterosexual marriage in Scandinavia, and Kurtz is arguing that was going to happen to the United States. So, without getting into too many details of the article, here's the question. And I'm looking for some bit of statistics out of here to see what he's arguing. I just found this article. Well, I'm going to have to find some summary of him. I can't go through this whole article. I don't want to bore you, but Stanley Kurtz. All right, so here's the question. Part of it is the facts. Part of it would be the perception, but is your perception that if the marriage rates are falling, less people are getting married? Could it be tied into the idea that gay marriage takes away the cachet, the specialness of marriage? Or is it possible? I'll have to get into Kurtz's argument for you, but is it possible that gay marriage changes? You know what a catalyst is in chemistry? A catalyst is something that comes in to an environment and changes things without being changed itself. And I don't know if this is a catalyst, but is it possible that gay marriage is a catalyst to disenfranchise marriage itself, to take away from its cachet? When I say its cachet, its specialness, it's, you know, 50 years ago, people had sex within marriage and people had children within marriage. That has radically changed. It seems like it would be inappropriate to blame that all on gay marriage. Maybe gay marriage is another step in the destruction of marriage, according to some people. We have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Joel.
Joel, good morning to you. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. And what is on your mind?
Well, you brought up the gay marriage and how it might be breaking up the other marriages.
Go ahead.
And I just don't see that, but I do see the government with all these programs. I would be much better off financially if me and my wife just got a divorce and we claimed, you know, shacked up and then got the government benefits. I mean,
Joel,
that's really what's driving this.
Joel, let me know if you need a recommendation on a lawyer for your cost-saving scheme. Well, let me ask you this. So Stanley Kurtz, who's a smart guy and he writes some good stuff, connecting in Scandinavia the gay marriage. Could it be the canary in the coal mine that we're willing to give, you know, move the franchise of marriage into gay, to the gay territory, that's a sign that marriage itself doesn't really, it's not unique, or it's, you know, I mean, is there a way to understand it from that perspective, or is the whole undertaking just falling apart at the seams and it doesn't matter anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not for gay marriage, but I really don't see that is breaking up the family unit. I think it's, again, more has to do with finances. I mean, healthcare. I mean, I know people that purposely aren't getting married because, you know, they can't afford their healthcare. So if they're single, then they get it for their kid and the lady of the house.
How about this?
The man just
okay. All right, but let me ask you this. Is it possible that our values and our goals in society have changed so much that marriage doesn't make sense anymore? I mean, it used to be you were raised with the idea that you're going to get married and have kids. And, you know, I mean, even gay people got married and they might have whatever relations on the side, but a lot of people who turned out to be gay later got married and did have children. So is it possible that in those days that's the only thing that made sense and that there was a cult of lifelong love, of romantic love, and everything was vested in marriage, and now you can have kids out of marriage or adopt kids with a thing, you know, by yourself. You can live with somebody, you can get married and divorced and remarried. None of this is any big deal anymore.
Well, and I do think there's a breakdown in culture and breakdown in commitment and all that other stuff. You know, if you look at how government has been basically replacing the man of the household by government interference and saying, hey, you don't need a man anymore, let me provide for you. That role is just disappearing. And if you really want to solve that problem, you would give, you know, just the same across the board tax incentives for married people as if you were shacking up, right?
Yeah, okay.
So,
all right, good points. Anything else? I got to go to local news.
That's it.
Thanks, Joel. Good call. All right. So I'm looking on the break. I'll look for or on the during the news. I'll look to see if I can find a summary of it. But, you know, Joel talks about the government doing it. Wasn't it the goal of the elites, the goal of the universities and the media and Hollywood to, you know, pull all of these things apart, and then the government follows through and kind of, you know, adds insult to injury? It just seems like it was an enormous goal. It's been an enormous goal of the elites to basically destroy marriage as it used to be, which has been done. So, you know, what's the end game for that? And according to some people, it's that the government would train the people how to be citizens, which we embarked on when we went into public education, right? I mean, the government then is the, not just the educator, but when you're educating, you're also putting in values. So anyway, we'll take a break here for local news. 635 Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back.
I've seen fire, I've seen rain, I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend, but I always thought that I'd see you.
All right, I'm looking through an article by Kurtz, and he said this is from National Review, and the date of this is 2001, so August 3rd, 2001, so this is 16 years old. He says in the middle of the article, but gay marriage is a surprisingly radical attack on the very foundations of marriage itself. It detaches marriage from the distinctive dynamics of heterosexual sexuality, divorces marriage from its intimate connection to the rearing of children, and opens the way to the replacement of marriage by a series of indefinitely flexible contractual arrangements. All this can only destroy the finely woven web of social expectations upon which, anyway, he's quoting somebody else, so anyway, it was predicted that gay marriage would help bring the demise of regular marriage. But I think that, and I mean, it seems to me that marriage is totally under attack as having any legitimacy. And so, you know, who knows, maybe gay marriage was the coffin nail in that you're not so, you know, straight marriage is not so special. There's no doubt that marriage is down. And when they brought marriage into Scandinavia, whether by coincidence or by cause, it seemed to have had a big impact on the rate, or it was associated. It was around when the rate went down. So it might be too simplistic. All right. So here's to say that gay marriage caused it. Speaking of which, threesome from hell as naked woman breaks bones falling from a balcony while having an orgasm before a second woman who was involved tried to help. This is in Germany. And when the paramedics showed up, the man involved had an embarrassing explanation. And so she suffered broken bones in her feet and legs after she fell 10 feet down from a balcony. And there were naked screams and slipping and snap bones in her arm and neck. I guess she'll never forget that one. Cops added that the man in the threesome told them that during the lovemaking there was a positional quarrel, one of the ladies leaning against the balcony, and so that ended up all right. Lost World, Secrets of Lost Eighth Continent, Zealandia to be unlocked as scientists set sail to explore underwater landmass. This is from the UK Sun. mysterious submerged continent disappeared 75 million years ago and has never been fully investigated. Wow, and it's right off the coast of Australia. Interesting. About the upper right-hand part of Australia. All right. Well, maybe we can get into that in a next week. Quebec bus driver struck with bat after telling passenger to put his cat away. The passenger struck the bus driver with a bat after he was told to keep his damn kitty inside its cage. Well, I added the damn, but passenger in Sherbrooke, Quebec struck a Quebec bus driver in the head with a baseball bat after talk about comfort animals. No, don't touch my comfort animal. The man became aggressive when the driver told him the animal needed to remain locked up. The suspected bat swinger began insulting the bus driver, and in the course of the verbal altercation, this is a quote from the police spokesman Samuel Ducharme, the suspect seized a baseball bat he had in his baggage and delivered a blow to the driver's head. Then the 24-year-old suspect fled, but was later arrested. And driver was taken to hospital, injuries to his face, jaw, and nose, but is expected to recover. Oh, my God. Well, there you go. There's who calls in on that. Deborah calls in to complain about ant critters in public spaces. All right. We'll take a little break here and come back. 523-1450, Kelly O'Connell. 645 on the button. Got some weather for you.
Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me to make a stand. You just got to see me through another day.
The marriage rate is falling, but I think it's still higher than it is in the European Union. But why would you want to get married when there's no downside to not getting married? I'm just asking. I mean, if the number of people who marry as virgins is 2 or 3%, so the vast majority of people are having sex outside of marriage to some extent, and there is no societal penalty for anything that people do sexually anymore, anyway. And moving in or out, being married or getting a divorce doesn't have any impact. What would be the nature of the emphasis to get married? Now, switching gears, Fire and Rain. I've got a little clip here from NPR to explain the song, one of the most popular songs of the last, say, 50 years, Fire and Rain, in terms of enthusiasm. Well, let's put it this way, probably James Taylor's most famous song. Check this out.
Noah Adams reports on James Taylor's 1970 song, Fire and Rain.
This is from NPR.
James Taylor now has a happy smile, and at 52, he is tall, thin, and mostly relieved of hair. In the old pictures from the 70s, he has long black hair and a somber, gaunt expression. His voice hasn't changed. Even in the saddest songs, it's always had a kindly nature to it. He was born in New England and raised in North Carolina, and you can hear the influence of both regions. We talked with James Taylor this month in New York City, the day after he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Taylor wrote Fire and Rain in 1968. The song has three verses. One is about a friend who committed suicide. Another is about Taylor's addiction to heroin. The third refers to a mental hospital and a band Taylor started called The Flying Machine. Each verse is followed by the same chorus. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. James Taylor told me he can't stand to hear his songs on the radio. He dives for the dial if Fire and Rain comes on. But it remains a song he likes to sing, and one that audiences always wait for.
I tried to figure it out at one point, how many times I'd sung it, and I think it's probably approaching 1,000 times now. I sung it yesterday lunchtime for a benefit And that may have been the thousandth time. For a while, I thought it would be nice to build an odometer, like a big odometer that was visible on stage that had a large plate on the top of it that one struck with a mallet, you know, and that every night we'd set it back to 999 and then turn it over to the ritual thousandth singing of Fire and Rain and then strike it with the mallet to drive it home.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne planned to me, put an end to you.
When you sing Fire and Rain now, does it ever flatten out emotionally for you after all these years?
Yes, sometimes it does. But I'm surprised really at how durable it is, or how reliable the connection, the emotional connection it makes is. But does it ever go flat for me? Yes, it has. And the way, if I'm distracted or overwhelmed, I can forget where I am. I mean, there's a song with three verses with the same form and three choruses following them. There's no bridge, there's no release, no break. So I can forget where I am. It's a terrifying thing, and it doesn't happen often, but it does, as they say, concentrate the mind.
But are you expecting to have a bit of a tingle and a sort of a glow, even going back to the time you wrote that song, every time you sing it? Do you expect that as a performer, to have that?
Yeah. You want to feel as though you're making a connection with it. It helps to have an audience there receiving it, because then you want it to happen for them too. It's like just a common, making music for an audience is a communal process. And so, you know, they're resonating with it. I catch that too. That's contagious.
To go over the three verses, the first one is about a friend who you found out had died.
Yeah, that's right.
Suzanne.
Yeah. At the time I was recording in England with the Beatles, and my friends had sort of kept the information about this death from me, because they thought, you know, this is a crucial time for him. He's doing his work, and we don't want to upset him or bring him down. So my friend Richard Corey told me about it, but he had known about it for a month or so before he mentioned it to me. So that's where the "They Let Me Know You Were Gone" comes in.
Second verse is when you're still struggling to get off hard drugs in London.
Well, no, actually that was in New York. And that was when I came back to this country from London and was surprised that I picked up a habit. So I was having physically very uncomfortable and having a rough time.
And the third verse in the mental hospital at Stockbridge.
That's right, up at Austin Riggs in Stockbridge. That's not so much a specific one. It's just sort of I don't know what kind of generally introspective kind of verse, I guess.
If Fire and Rain were prose rather than poetry, it would be more open and explicated and described.
Oh, I see. Right.
And would perhaps have less of a connection with people, do you think?
Right. That's true, I think.
Well, that's the background of that song, kind of a remarkable song, really. And here's a live version, and which we're in the middle of, 6:54. We'll be back with another Shift's riff, 523-1450, 805-6180. Open Topic Friday, if you want to bring anything up, call in, and we'll be right back.
My body's aching and my time is at hand, and I won't make it any other way.
Shift's riffs, breaking up is easy to do.
Hi there, this is Mark Schiff of Shift's Riffs, and I want to talk to you about breaking up, getting out of a relationship. It's very difficult, but don't do it the honest way, where you sit the family down, you tell them you want out. It's too painful, there's too many tears, it takes too long. You want a quick, easy approach. Start doing crazy things so they want to throw you out of the house. Like, for instance, The wife goes to work one day, the kids go to school, and you have a dog, sell the dog. Just get rid of the dog, sell the dog, sell your wife's china the same day. They come home, they go, where's the dog? Where's the china? Just say you sold it, sit down and read the newspaper. You're moving in the right direction. Start wearing your underwear on the outside of your pants. After doing this for a few days, they won't want to go out of the house with you. They'll hate the sight of this. You're moving in the right direction. Guys, if maybe one day you bring home your old girlfriend for your wife to meet, just surprise her. Bring her home one day to have dinner. Start talking about all the good times you had with her, how exciting it was to be with her, all the great trips you went on. Again, you're moving in the right direction. Ladies, if you're driving by Malibu, some beach one day, and you see some hunk there with a bathing suit on in perfect shape, bring him home to meet your husband. Say, honey, I want you to look exactly like Todd a year from now. Look at this guy. Isn't he beautiful? And look at yourself. Again, you're moving in the right direction. Now, if you do all these things and they don't work and the family still tells you that they love you and they care about you and they hug you and they kiss you, don't go anywhere because you're in the right place. These people love you. It's not easy to find people like this. Stick around. This is Mark Schiff.
All right. So anyway, we'll come back and pick it up again after the break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you.
All right. So anyway, I do have a guest here, but don't forget that Mr. Sean Duffy, Republican Wisconsin, predicted or stated that the Republicans picked up 1,000 seats since Obamacare was first instituted, and it appears to be, according to PolitiFact, accurate. And now, are they going to lose 1,000 seats because they can't get rid of it? It's possible, my friends. And Obamacare has repeal has been killed itself by the dying John McCain, ironically. So anyway, we do have a speaking of politicos, we do have a guest this morning, Mr. Or should I say Judge Kent Yalkut. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning, Kelly. How are you doing this morning?
Not too shabby. How about yourself?
Fantastic.
What's going on?
Well, I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what's going on in our Las Cruces Municipal Court. For those who haven't been following it carefully, the Las Cruces Municipal Court is currently taking about 24,000 cases per year. We're handling traffic, petty misdemeanors, DWIs. We've gone completely paperless, so the time that you need to go to court is minimal. And we've had a lot of positive response, both from the police department, from the defendants who come in, from the city council. So it seems to be working really well at this period of time.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Kelly.
And it's Judge Ryan over there and yourself. And so there's two levels. It's an old building. How about the heat problem?
The heat problem isn't as bad this summer as it's been last summer. We seem to have air conditioning again once in our courthouse. The building is 102 years old, so you have to expect a few problems. We seem to be muddling through. The people are pretty much willing to work with us on it. And so it's getting better as we move along.
All right, Kent, I've known you for quite a while. You've got kind of an interesting background. Can you tell us a little bit? I know you're serving now as a judge, but tell the folks a little bit about your background. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Las Cruces. I was born and raised here, and I've lived here my entire life, except for 3 years in law school. Went to all the local schools, went to New Mexico State University. When I graduated from law school, I went ahead and became an assistant district attorney and served there for 5 years.
Did you work with Susana Martinez at all?
I did. The person who hired me was Doug Driggers, who's now one of our district court judges. Susana Martinez was an assistant district attorney with me at that period of time. When I left the district attorney's office, I actually went to work as a private attorney. but ran for office and became a judge back in 1997.
How was that?
It was actually pretty good. I enjoyed doing it. I served there for 3 years, and then I ran for district attorney against Susana Martinez, lost that race.
By a few votes?
A little bit. And went into private practice again until I served as special commissioner for domestic violence here for Las Cruces.
So you've had a lot of experience.
I've had a lot of experience. It's good working with the people here. I find the weather here is the best. The people here are the best. The food here is the best. I love Las Cruces.
And you, what changes have you seen from when you were the judge previously till now?
When I first came in, computers were just sort of beginning, and everything was done by hand. It would take sometimes 2 or 3 days to be able to pull files for a person who would come into court. They would have to come back repeatedly to get things taken care of.
There was a lot of lost files, too, as I recall.
It wasn't so much as that they were lost, it's just that they could not be found. I think maybe it was a better thing. The basement at the courthouse at that period of time had over 2 million files. Trying to search 2 million files could take quite a long
time.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Now, how about ghosts in that building?
I think the building is so old that you hear things all the time. I wouldn't go so much as ghosts, as I would just say that we're always worried that the roof is going to fall in.
And it does almost have, it's almost like a saloon upstairs, isn't it, with all the wood?
It looks very interesting. The building was the old post office here in Las Cruces. Then it was a federal court. It was a state district court. It became the Las Cruces Municipal Court. And it's gone through a lot of different ownership. And so with each ownership, it has sort of a unique piece of history.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can imagine. So what are you guys focusing on in the court now? What are some of your aspirations or goals?
One of the first things we're working on, and we should have accomplished here really pretty soon, is retaking DWIs. For a while, all the DWIs in Las Cruces were filed with the magistrate court while we were working things out with our city attorney's office. Now that that's been taken care of, the city attorney will be working back in the Las Cruces Municipal Court, and DWIs will be filed there. I'm pretty happy with what we do. As I had told you, Kelly, because we've gone paperless, when people come in, we can take care of their cases immediately, both for the people who walk in and for the police who take care of the cases.
Now, it seems like it's easier to get through municipal court than it is magistrate or district.
It is, and there's a number of reasons. First, the magistrate also handles civil matters. They have jury trials. The district court handles the serious cases. For the Las Cruces Municipal Court, about 50% of our cases are traffic tickets. The other 50% are codes or petty misdemeanors.
Uh-huh.
They don't need a jury trial. The cases, when the people come in, they could be handled quickly and more efficiently.
Oh, that's good. We'll take a little break here. We've got Live Mockingbird, Carly Simon and James Taylor. I've got a remarkable story that occurred in front of Judge Yalkut that I'm going to detail involving, it's a military hero. What else can I say? 523-1450 to call in. If you have any questions, if you have any statements, if you have questions about how the court runs or anything else, call in. Judge Yalkut is here. And it's a real pleasure to have him. Always a fun guy to hang out with. We'll be right back. Well, we're here with Judge Yalkut, and he is just happens to be running for re-election. And Kent, why are you running again? What is it about the job that you want to continue?
Well, Kelly, as I was telling you, I was in private practice until 2015 when I got a call from the city of Las Cruces informing me that the previous judge, Melissa Miller Burns, had retired and asked me to come back on. I went ahead and started working there part-time. The city council went ahead and made me full-time by a vote of 7-0, And so I've been serving in that capacity since March of last year. It's really an interesting job. You get to see interesting people every day. The election cycle this year, all candidates can only announce on September 25th. It's only a six-week period. So none of the long campaigns and things that you see in other types of races, because it's a nonpartisan race, which means there's no political parties involved. You're just running as a regular person. There's not a lot of campaigning. I think the people of Las Cruces will appreciate the fact that there will be little advertising, not much with signs. Basically, people will throw their names into the hat on September 25th, and 6 weeks later, they'll see what happens.
Yeah, interesting. So I've got this story that happened over in Muni Court as I was I got assigned to a public defender. They have this thing where you sign up and you can get some cases over there. So I came in, and there was a gentleman a little bit older, and I introduced myself, and you know, we were talking about the case, and he said, well, make sure that you let the judge know that I am a service member. I said, all right, so what branch? And he said, Marines. And I said, all right, and what position? He said, general. I said, for heaven's sakes, you're a general in the Marines. Now, the guy must have been at least 75. So I said, well, that's remarkable. I said, do you have a commanding officer? And he said, yes. And I said, well, what's his name? And he said, his name is Edgar Allan Poe Westmoreland.
So, I remember the case well, Kelly, and you handled it really well.
You did too, Your Honor.
You know, one of the things that people don't see is that we get a lot of people come in who are mentally ill.
Yeah.
And when we take care of those cases, we hear them. They're generally transferred to the district court who can take care of them. But in this case, the gentleman came in. He had a number of cases.
He's 17, wasn't it?
He had 17 cases. Yeah. He insisted after that he was a commander of the Marine Corps.
And I said, you know, he can't return to service before, you know, he gets these little niggling cases taken care of.
And so you took care of it. The court was appreciative of what you did, Kelly. And it's good to see that your service to the community. We do have a number of what we call referral attorneys, not quite public defender, because that's for the state. What they do is they come in and they help people who cannot afford an attorney, and they take care of their cases. Kelly has always been one of those and has done a phenomenal job.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, let me ask you something. You've got a ticket at municipal court. You've got an issue. You've got a case. What are some suggestions to make it a better experience to come out ahead or to do better in court?
One of the best things you can do, if you receive a ticket or citation, you should always check the box that you want to appear in court. My opinion is that if you check the penalty assessment box, you're just already admitted that you're guilty and you have to pay a fine. Once you come into court, you come in for what we call an arraignment. It's the first time you get to see the judge. At that period of time, the judge will explain the charges to you. And if you're happy with what's going on at that period of time, you may want to enter a plea of guilty or no contest. If not, the court always gives you the chance to go to a pretrial conference. That's where people like Kelly come in. At the pretrial conference, they can meet with the police officer, they can get an attorney, and see if they can get it worked out. I'm pretty proud of the fact that in our court, our pretrial conferences settle 99% of the cases that come in. The Las Cruces Police Department has gone ahead and entered into a sort of community policing program where they work with people to get everything taken care of. And so on the rare occasion when we have a trial, and Kelly, I'll let you know, you've seen this firsthand. Most of the trials that we have, you get people who are just dissatisfied probably with life. People will come in. We've had one instance where we had a trial where the individual had just stopped on a spina in the middle of the road. And then, of course, someone ran into the back of his car. And he took that to trial because he believed that he can stop in the middle of the street whenever he wanted to. It's funny because of the 24,000 cases that our court gets, I maybe go to trial once a month. It's very rare that we go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
The attorneys, the defendants work things out. The police department works with everybody. And because the court is so efficient, a lot of times there are problems when you can't get into court for months on end. In our court, the usual time from the start of the case to the end of the case is less than 30 days.
Yeah, that's good. And I do enjoy being in your courtroom. I find it to be a very kind of a good atmosphere and you have a good judicial temperament, you don't get upset, you don't react to things that are said that might be rude or out of context or whatever. You keep things moving. So I always enjoy being in your court.
Thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate that.
Of course. Now, is there any contact information? Can the public support a judicial campaign? Can they contribute? Can they do anything?
There's many things a judge actually cannot do and actually have less rights than a regular person. We can't openly solicit money. All we can do is really ask people to support us or vote for us when we run for election. I have a committee that's working on it right now. All I can do is ask people, if you're satisfied with what I'm doing and with what the court is doing here in Las Cruces, to vote for me. I've heard that other people may be running against me. We will just see what happens on September 25th. But right now, I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm glad that we can give that service to the people of Las Cruces.
Very nice. Well, thanks for coming on. Was there anything else you wanted people to know?
No, just remember, if you haven't registered to vote, make sure you do that by September 25th. The city will be giving out information on when you can vote early and what will be going on during the election. We also have some city councilors and some decisions that are coming up in the November election as well. So take a look for all of them and make sure you get out and vote.
Thanks for coming on, Judge.
You're welcome.
We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
My name's Mac.
Mac, good morning. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
The National Monument.
Sure.
All of the reasons for having this thing as a National Monument, I just wanted to point out some other things that supposedly that Kilburn Hole, an ancient extinct volcano. Northeastern New Mexico, there's a Capulin Mountain, which has been described as the most perfect extinct volcano in the world, and there's even a road to the top of it. It's not a national monument. As far as the lava flow on the road from Carrizozo over to San Antonio, there's a huge, huge lava flow there. It's not a national monument.
I'm seeing a pattern here.
Yeah, they talk about World War II bombing targets, and if World War II bombing targets are so sacred, then perhaps we should annex Berlin and Tokyo and make them that part of a national monument. And finally, I do support the Organ Mountains themselves being part of the monument, but all of this other stuff, I think it's nothing but looking for excuses for a land grab. One more point. The Santa Fe Trail crosses northeastern New Mexico, which is extremely historical. It's not a national monument, so... All of these things that they've come up for justification, I think.
Right. So, in other words, all these things need to be national monuments.
Well,
no, just kidding.
I don't think they do, but I think they point out the folly of the justification that the proponents here use for this national monument.
Yeah.
This huge bunch of desert that they just want to keep anybody from using.
All right, great points. Thanks for the call. Have a good weekend. And all right, folks. So anyway, Judge, thanks for coming in. I hope you have a wonderful day on the bench.
You too, Kelly.
All right, folks, and we'll be right back. A little more Mockingbird. 523-1450 to call in. I think I got the text machine in my vehicle. I'm going to go out and look. We'll be right back. Local news. All right, we just talked to Judge Yalkut. He's running again, and he has a nice courtroom, very friendly, and as is fitting a lower court. And so what do you think about the trans issue? Do you think that it was appropriate when the president said there should be no trans people coming into the military? And do you think that they will be allowed to finish their time there? All right, here's a little back and forth on this. I don't know if you're interested in it, but by the way, you know, a 9-foot-long snaggletooth salmon called the saber-tooth salmon. I'd never even heard of that before I started getting into what was going on with we found this elephant. This kid tripped over this elephant skeleton. Well, it's really a fossil. But of all the stuff that was alive back in those days, you had miniature pronghorns, giant sloths, woolly rhinoceros, lions. You had cave lions, tigers. You had saber-toothed tigers, various examples of elephants, mastodons, woolly mammoth. So you had all these critters out there, and they found a lot of these in the La Brea tar pits. So it's kind of fascinating to look back and see all of that. And I guess those animals are post-dinosaur, but they're no longer with us, and they're trying to bring back kind of a similar situation up in Russia. But here is Leon Panetta talking about the trannies and getting kicked out of the military.
Security issues, and I just hope that he remains as national security advisor.
I want to turn to another important issue that has come up over the past day or so. The president announcing yesterday on Twitter that he intends to reinstate a ban on transgender Americans serving in the U.S. military. You served as defense secretary under President Obama. He decided to allow transgender Americans to serve in the military. What do you think of the president's decision?
I think the president took a giant step backwards in terms of our military strength. The reality is we are the strongest military power on the face of the earth. And the reason we're the strongest military power is because of the of those men and women who are willing to serve this country in uniform. And we've made clear that if you're a good soldier, if you're willing to fight, we don't base that on race or color or creed or gender or sexual orientation. We base it on the fact that you can be a good soldier.
All right. So I've listened to a number of explanations on the left and the Democrats as to why that was the wrong decision. And they all basically say the same thing, that it is biased. It is biased, but not only that, that it's harming the military. Now, that's an important issue, I think. Is getting rid of the trannies out of the military going to harm the military? Well, here's a back and forth between Tucker Carlson and, can't remember this guy's name, is a Democratic congressman. Check this out. I thought it was a pretty good back and forth.
In a surprise announcement this morning, President Trump reversed the previous administration's order to admit transgendered individuals into the military. The president made the announcement on Twitter in the AM. He tweeted this: after consultation with my generals and military experts, be advised the U.S. government will not accept nor allow transgendered individuals to serve in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with tremendous costs and medical disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you. Democrats were not grateful for that. They quickly became very angry. Here's part of what they said.
This disgusting ban will weaken our military and land that it defends.
Our nation is not safer when we sanction discrimination.
Because of President Trump's announcement, America will be less safe.
The President of the United States this morning announced he is blowing 15,000 holes in our military readiness.
It's undermining, I think, our national defense.
This disgusting action endangers the lives of American service members and makes our country less safe.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney represents New York in the House of Representatives, and he joins us tonight. Congressman, thanks a lot for coming on.
But
so I understand why people don't like this, but to not like it and to claim that it makes our country less safe are two different things. How does this make our country less safe?
Well, how about SEAL Team 6?
Okay.
I think you'd agree they make our country more safe. So Kristen Beck, member of SEAL Team 6, she's a transgender woman, 7 combat tours, earned the Bronze Star with Valor and
right.
Purple Heart. She's done a hell of a lot more for our country than you and I ever will. And she made our country safer. That's the person we're going to remove from military service.
I don't think she served as a transgender SEAL, though.
No, but there are thousands of transgender service members serving honorably and meeting the test, that the high test that the military expects of its service members. We should absolutely use the standard the president started with, which is keeping our country safe. And part of keeping our country safe is keeping good people in the military. These are good people.
Right. Well, transgenders have never been allowed to serve openly and to have their transitions paid for by the U.S. government. This is something that began in a gradual way with the Obama administration. This country's been around for almost 250 years, winning a bunch of wars. That's not a slight on any specific person. I'm merely skeptical at why this makes our country less safe. I don't actually think that you can show that. I think you're just mad about it, and you're using our national security to make your point.
Well, look, there are thousands of people serving honorably. We won a bunch of wars before we integrated the armed services with African Americans, and we won a bunch of wars without women serving. But we have an enormous number of talented, diverse people serving. We wouldn't believe we were more safe because we excluded whole groups of Americans. And look, the point is that right now, thousands of transgender service members are serving with distinction. And there's not a reason on earth that you would kick them out of the military except for prejudice. And that's
wrong. That's just a silly thing to say. I mean, this is a legitimate debate. And for you to say anyone who doesn't agree with you is a bigot. I mean, there's a massive wait, hold on, slow down.
Well, I didn't say that.
Yes,
but
you did.
You said
the only reason is prejudice.
Right.
In other words, if you disagree with me, being a holy man, you're a bad person. My only point is there are two sides to this. There's a cost to this. There are difficulties integrating people. There are questions about what it means to be transgender. These are real adult questions, and you're blowing them off by describing anyone who doesn't agree with you as motivated by prejudice, and that's childish.
What is the reason for taking members of the military who are serving now, thousands of them,
right,
with distinction, without a problem, and kicking them out over on this basis? What would that reason be?
Well, I mean, the reason as articulated by the people who oppose this is that it's expensive to pay for the physical transition, the medical transition from one sex to the other.
And
paying that at a time when the military is scrambling for funds is a distraction from the core mission, which is winning wars.
Right. Well,
the onus is on you, since the U.S. military has never had this policy in its history, to show that paying for sex change operations is going to somehow make us more likely to beat, I don't know, Al-Qaeda.
No, excuse me. We have that policy now, and we've had more than a year to see how it works, and there hasn't been any diminishment of readiness or any disruption of any kind. And what we know is men like Shane Ortega, another transgender service member, who conducted hundreds of missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, multiple combat tours.
As a transgender person, that's not true.
Yes, as a matter of fact. And there are right now people like Riley Dosh, a cadet, who just graduated from the military academy.
I'm sorry, what you're engaging in is demagoguery. I'm asking you bigger, broader questions, which is it an actual concern that the Pentagon would have to pay for sex change operations? Do you think that's a valid military expense?
Well, would you
say? Do you think these are real questions about how to integrate people in close quarters living who haven't fully transitioned? To blow those off as like bigotry is just wrong.
Well, I think to be fair, we've spent years studying this. Rand Commission did a big report on this.
We haven't spent years studying this.
All right, so this guy goes through this thing and never admits that Tucker has a point, which I found interesting. And then Tucker says, you're a demagogue. I can't talk to you anymore. But that kind of lays it out. Now, here's a little bit from Germaine Greer, who's one of the leading lights in the feminist movement. She's British, talking about transgender women. And I thought it was kind of interesting because what she said is that if you get a sex change from male to female, that doesn't make you a woman. Now, it would seem almost as if by definition that she would have to take that position, because otherwise there would be nothing unique about being a woman. But listen to this.
I was going to talk about women and power, the lessons of the 20th century, because I think there's a lot of triumphalist talk that masks the real historic situation. And apparently people I've decided that because I don't think that post-operative transgender men, i.e. M2F, transgender people are women, I'm not to be allowed to talk.
But surely if a man who feels that he actually would like gender reassignment to make him, her, feel more comfortable in her body, what should be done? They should be allowed to do that.
I'm not saying that people should not be allowed to go through that procedure. What I'm saying is it doesn't make them a woman. It happens to be an opinion. It's not a prohibition. Carry on.
It's Kelly.
If that's what you think it is you want to do. I've been accused
of
inciting
violence
against transsexual people. That's absolute nonsense.
I just found out that the recording is not coming over the radio, and I do appreciate the phone call. So Jermaine Greer is saying that she didn't think that getting a sex change makes someone a woman. Now think about this. If you're a feminist, what do you stand for? The idea that women have certain worth, value, that women are different than men, that women need to be supported and given equality despite being different. It seems like the sex change movement, the transsexual movement, says that gender is superficial. It's something that's made up in the mind, and that it can be changed if we want it. So it would seem to me there's a contradiction between the the feminist movement and the transsexual movement. That's what I wanted to bring up. 7:41. We've got some local weather for you. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 805 6180. All right, one of the comments in the text, get rid of all oddballs. No one wants to rely on mentally unstable people. What do you think about that? Are transsexual people oddballs? Are they mentally unstable? And should we keep them out of the military just based on the fact that they are confused about between their body and their mind who they really are? All right, here's an interesting article that I ran into yesterday. A large volcanic eruption may have caused the first mass extinction. Researchers in the United States and Japan may have found the cause of the first mass extinction on Earth. There have been five mass extinctions, the divergent evolution of early animals 600 to 450 million years ago. Number one, volcanic activity was the cause of both the third and the fourth, while an asteroid impact led to the fifth. But triggers of the first and second mass extinctions had until now been unknown. A new study suggests volcanic activity. So the reason that I think that's kind of interesting is that one reason that they felt like the asteroids had killed the dinosaurs was because they had found iridium. And iridium is a very rare metal that is associated with asteroids. But there's also iridium at the center of the Earth. And so if there were eruptions, the eruptions could explain why iridium was on the surface of the Earth. And also, if you put any stock into the history of the Earth that's presented in the Bible, the flood event that they talk about was, I think, if you look at it, appears to be more related to the earth than the sky. There was rain, but there was also what they called an opening of the fountains of the deep. And I did some research on this and found out that under the surface of the Earth, there are tubes that relocate water from one part of the ocean to another. And there's also, I had just mentioned the other day, a lot of water inside of the Earth. And so in the form of wood ringite, and there's another substance called majorite. Majorite, I think, has oxygen, which would explain where the oxygen on the earth came from before there were plants to create it. And then wood ringite, and this is very deep in the earth, wood ringite represents an enormous amount of water. So if there were deep volcanic eruptions, maybe under the water, it could have liberated a lot of, and I mean, obviously there's a lot of the stuff that we really don't understand still, but it could have liberated a lot of water out of inside of the earth and brought it to the surface as well as to create the flood. So anyway, it was just an idea, but there is some evidence here in this. Volcanic eruptions triggered dawn of the dinosaurs article from physics.org. So huge pulses of volcanic activity, this is another article, are likely to have played a key role in triggering the end Triassic mass extinction, which is what I was just talking about, which set the scene for the rise and age of the dinosaurs. The Triassic extinction took place approximately 200 million years ago and was preceded by the dinosaur age, one of the largest mass extinctions of animal life on record. Casualty list includes large crocodile-like reptiles, several invertebrates, et cetera, et cetera. So, all right, we'll take a last break here. And I've got a little clip from Rush Limbaugh on why the president may be attacking Jeff Sessions. It's an alternative theory. It's kind of interesting. 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. Hey, it's Kelly.
It's Tim, TJ.
Hey, what's up?
I'm gonna give you a call at the end of your show.
All right.
Just wanted to basically say you were talking, I didn't catch the whole story. You were talking earlier about transgender folk and women being in our military.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, what's up?
Let me put you on hold because there's stuff playing through the speaker. I'll bring you on when we go on the air, okay?
Okay, all right.
All right. Okay, we do have a caller here. It is Tim the Communist. Tim, how you doing today?
Hey, Kelly, I'm doing pretty well. I just wanted to call in with a quick comment. I didn't catch the whole story, except you were talking about women and transgendered folk in the military.
All right.
Just one comment about that. Basically, I'm sure anyone that's in our military, especially those in higher forces, Marines, Special Forces, SEALs, you know, those top ranks right there, Green Berets, they have to go through certain rigors. Especially the men have to go through certain rigors as it is now in order to become one of those higher ranks. I feel that if women or anyone that calls themselves transgendered can put themselves in through that too and pass those tests, they should get that place as well.
Well, let me, Tim.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah, okay, I got you. And there's a certain logic to what you're saying, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that a lot of these people that they're bringing on TV to interview are people that were in, say, the SEALs or the Marines, and then they transitioned when they got out, and then they're interviewing them, and but it's not being pointed out that they weren't post op transsexuals while they were serving, and the reason that we know that they're not is because the SEALs take the most fit men out there, the most mentally and physically fit men, right? It's a premier service. When a person goes through the transition, they put them onto female hormones. What do you think that does to their muscle mass?
Basically, female hormones, it might actually take their muscle mass down. It actually might. That could be true.
All right.
I don't know enough about it to make a full conclusion about it, but the way you put it there, you might be right. I do not know why they wait till they get out to do a transition, and they might not be suitable or fit being transitioned while they're still in the military. You're right. I'd have to do more research on that.
So, what do you think overall? What do you think of transsexualism overall? How do you see it?
Overall, I think it's perfectly fine. I think anyone who thinks who they want to be, if it's a man trapped in a woman's body, woman trapped in a man's body, if someone thinks that they want to be pansexual, transsexual, whatever it is, whatever you want to call yourself and you're comfortable with it, go right ahead, because you're deciding what you want to do. And no one else really, it's basically the right to be walking and not get bopped on the nose. I have a right to extend my arm to the point of not bopping someone on the nose. When I bop someone on the nose, and when it comes to their sexual rights, I'm bopping them on the nose.
All right.
So
Mills' famous harm law. You can do anything you want as long as it doesn't harm anybody else, and nobody should be able to harm you if you're not harming them. But to ask you this, I mean, isn't there an identity of people inside? Is it just superficial? Is it just whatever the person wakes up and says, I'm not a man anymore, I'm a woman? Isn't there something more to sexual identity than just the external genitals?
I think that a lot of people may be confused during certain points of their lives, but for that, I'm going to say this. Basically, everyone has to go through their own quest in their life, their own path of exploration to find what they are comfortable and confident in and with. And once they find that, then they can decide what they want to do. If they're comfortable and confident being a man when they were born a woman, then that's it. I am comfortable staying a heterosexual man. That's how I was born, and that's my quest and how I've grown up with it. But I'm normal like that. Other people may have a different path.
All right, but you're not really answering the question. And there's some people that say there's an identity that's imprinted within people that's consistent with their external genitalia. You can't change it. You can change. You can remove breasts and other genital areas and refashion them into something else, but you're not changing inside the person, which is determined to a large extent through the child is in the womb. The child is getting hormones, and those hormones form the brain to either male or female. Tim, I got to go. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it, Carol.
Thanks.
I'll listen to you again. Good conversation.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Shifts, riffs, people hate complainers.
Not between me and Trump.
Oh, I was going to play you something from Limbaugh, too, but all right, I'm going to play this next week because we don't have time for both, but it is kind of a okay, let me play 1 minute here.
Okay, to the audio soundbite roster, part two. The drive-by media on me.
Well, let me just sum this up because I don't know where it occurs. Rush Limbaugh is saying that it's possible that it's a fake fight between Trump and Jeff Sessions, and it's really setting the stage for Jeff Sessions under the compulsion of the criticism by Trump to go after Hillary Clinton, and that their goal was always to go after Hillary Clinton. And this is just more wrestling. This is more big time wrestling. This is more fake stuff to get what they want. I don't know if it makes any sense to you, but here's Schiff's Riffs. People hate complainers.
Hi there. This is Mark Schiff for Schiff's Riffs. And I want to talk to you about a major problem called complainers. People that complain all the time. People that never stop complaining. These are some of the most annoying people on the planet. You know, the type of people that when they come over your house, They complain. They go, your dog sheds all over me. Your cat, I'm allergic to it. But, you know, you feed them something, it's cold or it's too salty. These are the type of people that when they hit the lottery, they complain because they have to spend half the money in taxes. They're the type of people when you see them on your caller ID, you go, but you know you have to answer the phone because complainers will track you down. They'll call on your home phone. Then they'll call on your cell phone. Then they'll fax you. They'll tweet you. They'll Facebook you. They'll text you. They'll show up at your house. I had a guy come to my house recently, a big complainer named Bob. He comes over and goes, Mark, I need to talk to you. I got to talk to someone. Do you mind if I come in for like 5 hours and have a chat with you? This is awful. And they never, ever stop complaining. Also, if you go to funerals, you'll notice something. Whenever they talk about the deceased are never complainers. They never complain about anything. It's always the complainers that are still alive. Try to remember back when the next time you go to a funeral and they have a little memorial speech about the deceased, they go, he never complained. John never, ever complained. He had cancer for 19 years. They cut off his arms and his legs, never, ever once complained. I remember one time when they cut his arm off, he sent the thank you note to the doctor. Thank you very much. You did a wonderful job, doctor. My friend told me his grandmother was born in Siberia. She was solid every night. They used to